Dear listeners, Sai Ram, welcome to our radio series, Afternoon Satsang. This is a discussion between Radio Sai's Prem and Arvind on different spiritual topics. Every Thursday on Asia Stream, you can enjoy this live conversation. It's from 12:30 p.m. to 2 p.m. Indian Standard Time. Today's episode was first featured as part of Thursday Live on 6th December, 2012.
Humble pranams at the lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan. Sow a thought, reap an action. Sow an action, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. So much depends on what we think. And to make sure that we think as much as possible of our dear Lord, we at Radio Sai endeavor to keep you tuned to that divinity which has brought us all together. And to do that, and to help us all achieve that, me and my brother Arvind are here to host another segment of Afternoon Satsang. And this is Prem from Team Radio Sai welcoming all our listeners and brother Arvind to today's show.
Thank you, Prem. Offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet and expressing our gratitude for giving us this chance to be part of his beautiful play, the drama that he has set about. We begin today's afternoon satsang with a recap of last week's satsang. Last week, we started off with the different dreams, visions, prophecies that people have often received at a personal level from Swami. And we saw how that most of the times, the purpose of these dreams and prophecies are not understood, and their actual interpretation and meaning too are beyond the realm of our mind and thoughts and reasoning. It is only after they come true or they actually happen in the real world that we are able to look back and realize how profound the prophecies or dreams or predictions were and gain the insight and lesson that was embedded in it for each one of us. And thus it becomes difficult to say what will happen in the future based on the dreams that we have received from Swami and based on messages that we have received from Swami, because we do not realize what is the actual purpose of these dreams and why certain people receive it and certain people don't. We just have to wait patiently with a prayer in our hearts and wait for things to unfold and then appreciate the divine grandeur.
And always, you know, invariably Swami's words are so mysterious that even those which apparently look very simple are so complex.
Very right. Prem, actually somebody said that when Swami speaks to you, the serious statements that he makes, you automatically pay attention to it because Swami is telling it seriously.
Exactly.
It is those casual ones that you miss. And this was the former controller of examinations, Professor Nanjundaya sir, and he was saying that whenever you feel that Swami is speaking casually, make efforts to become more alert and more attentive, because in those casual statements too are revealed great truths.
And another incident I remember was, you must have heard of the name of a person called Venkatamuni, a very old time devotee of Swami.
Correct.
It seems he used to travel a lot with Swami in those earlier days when Swami used to drive from Puttaparthi to Chennai, Chennai to, it was Madras then,
correct,
to Bangalore and Bangalore to Hyderabad. He was one of those devotees who were fortunate to travel with Swami on many of those occasions. So it seems one day Swami came and asked his wife, Amma, can I take your husband with me?
Okay.
And she said, of course, Swami, why do you ask me? Even? I mean, you never do and you never have to also. You can take him wherever you want. So again Swami said, no, I have to ask you, can I take your husband? And she said, yes, Swami, don't tell I have not asked. I have asked you. And you agreed. So she said, okay. And it so happened that that journey was his last with Swami. I mean, Swami was traveling to one particular city and on the way he actually lost his life.
Oh.
If you look at it, you know, Swami was actually giving a premonition. You know, Swami was giving an indication. At the same time, Swami was also giving an indication of the blessing that he was going to get. Swami clearly said, I am taking him. Nobody is taking him away from you or Swami, but Swami is actually taking him to himself.
So that shows how important everything. And Prem, we do not understand the ways in which these things work out, you know, whether we consider it as a part of self-effort or whether it is destiny. I am reminded of one more story. I had heard it and I have read it also once or twice. It is about, you know, Garuda, mighty eagle which serves as the vehicle for Lord Vishnu. So Garuda, it seems, was one day flying around and Garuda sees a small little bird sitting in the nest. And Garuda also sees Yama, the Lord of Death, looking at this bird in a contemplative mood and then just smiling. So Garuda realizes that the God of Death has come to pick up this tiny fledgling, which has not yet even become an adult, you know. So Garuda's heart melts and feels that this little fledgling requires, you know, a lease of life. It needs to spend its life and then die at a older age. So the story goes that Garuda picks up this little bird and flies across the seven oceans, the seven seas, the seven mountains, and, you know, basically to a very, very far off place, and hides this fledgling in a safe burrow, in a burrow in the tree.
Okay.
And feels that, okay, I have done, you know, I have saved one life.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes the next day, it sees that the little fledgling is dead and wonders, how did Yama get to know where I have hidden this little bird? So he decides to confront the Lord of Death, goes to Yama and asks, how did you know that it was going to die there? And Yama says, it was supposed to die there in that burrow. I had been told, and that's why I went there directly. And then Garuda asks, but what about you looking and contemplating? It was some other place there. So Yama says, I was told that this bird is supposed to die in this burrow of a tree. But then this bird is so far away, across seven seas, across seven mountains. So I thought maybe this bird is going to fly over here and come and meet its death. But then when I saw it was a fledgling, I was contemplating how on earth is this little bird going to meet its death in the place distant. And that is why I was contemplating. And so here was Garuda, you know, wanting to save the bird. It was a case of you meeting your destiny on the path you take to avoid it.
Exactly.
So the way destiny works, the way fate works, it is so complicated, it becomes so difficult for us to understand.
If you just look at something, you know, in the physical world, let us say the nature of an electron or an atom, it's been invented as late or discovered as late as probably the 17th century, 18th century. And even later we are trying to say that, you know, the electron behaves like a wave. It has taken us so many millennia to actually decode the mysteries of nature. And here is the Lord who is actually the source of all the mystery. And if He comes and gives us a message, gives us a word, and, you know, anything else, how much more difficult it would be to decodify that.
Exactly. That's why, see, we have no problem accepting what the scientists tell us. You know, they tell us, this is it, this is it, this is the equation, follow it. We, you know, learn it, memorize it by heart, and then even reproduce it in our exams and stick and swear by that formula. The same thing when God tells us, we seek proof. We say we want evidence, we want proof, we want experience. But to understand nature itself, as you said, it has taken us so many millennia. How much more time it takes for us to understand God, who they say is beyond the mind. And so how can we ever understand?
The beautiful description of God, which I've read long back, is saying that you are trying to reach by reason that which is by nature beyond reason. You know, it is like telling somebody that, hey, look at this. This is invisible to naked eye. And the other person says, no, I can't see it. And I say, that's what I'm telling you. That's an attribute of this object. So, you know, God by nature is beyond the intellect. And it is but obvious that He cannot be understood by the intellect.
And that brings us to today's topic, which is about prayer. We started this topic last week. If you remember, Prem, we were discussing of how prayer is simply being in sync with God.
True.
I was thinking that maybe before we go into prayer and how we should pray or what we should pray, we had done parts of it before with our Chinnakathas. I thought we should maybe discuss on what is the benefit of prayer. How does prayer benefit?
Exactly. You know, what we concluded last week was true, that praying is a way of being in sync with God, or being in touch with God. But all said and done, you know, prayer is some form in which we seek something. If not, prayer is only seeking. Definitely seeking leads us to pray. And maybe by seeking leading us to pray, that prayer will actually lead us into being in a state of being sync with the Lord, or being in contact with the Lord, or communion, as they say. So all said and done, seeking is a very important part.
You know, I was thinking of going more in a little scientific manner.
Okay.
Let us say, when we talk of prayer, we are always, you know, we bring in God, and let us classify the whole world into three kinds of people.
Okay.
You know, this kind of classification is so famous. In fact, I heard one which said, there are two types of people on earth. One who believe that there are two types, and one who believe that there are no two types, you know. This is a very, very common, there are two kinds of people. This is one more classification. There are three kinds of people. So one that believe that whatever happens is a reaction, reflection and resound of what they have done, which means it is our efforts. They completely subscribe to the theory of self-effort determining everything. Then there is the next category of people who believe that everything is destined, predestined. No, there is a predetermined.
Okay.
It is destined. So there is nothing that I can do. It's all there. It's all in the script, and things unfold as they happen. And there's a third category. You know, this third category is a little diverse, because depending on their own experiences and feelings and convictions, they believe a percentage of life is destined, a percentage of it is self-effort. Some believe that self-effort is more important than destiny, some believe destiny is more important than self-effort, but they believe that both play a role. So I feel maybe we should look at how prayer helps all these three categories of people: those who subscribe completely to self-effort, those who subscribe partially to self-effort and partially to destiny, and those who subscribe completely to destiny.
Yeah, but it's difficult to say that somebody who believes completely in self-effort will ever believe in prayer. But the fact is they do, because, I mean, one thing is to say a person who believes 100% in self-effort, but the other way of looking at it is, if you were to divide the time we spend, like there are times when we believe 100% in self-effort. You know, there are times when we believe completely that everything is predetermined, even if we are not, you know, strictly going into that watertight compartment of those who believe only in self-effort.
Correct, I understand. So you mean it is not that there are three categories of people, it is that every person falls into one of these three categories?
Depending on what is,
what is the situation,
what is the situation at that time.
So if when I am faced with a certain situation, I feel that, you know, it's all destiny. Some other situation, I feel that if I work harder, I can overcome it.
True.
Some other situation, I feel that, you know, if I work and if I have God's grace, then I can... Wow, that's very nice.
Yeah. So maybe we'll have to look at it as, you know, in all these situations, or if you say that all these three categories of people, what role prayer can play in each one's life. So what do you think? 100% self-effort?
No, I feel there is a problem with those who believe with 100% self-effort. And that problem is not very difficult to understand. How many times either we see or we experience in our own personal life that we spend all our energies to do something and it results in failure. And some others seem to, you know, without putting in any effort, seem to get through. For example, those who are born rich and those who are born poor, if we take. At birth, there is no effort that has been put in. But why is it that one person is so born poor? I mean, is at such a disadvantage financially. And the other person is born so filthy rich also at times that he is at a superb advantage financially. Now that is extreme, that is at birth. Even if we take in terms of efforts, there are two students. Why is it that one student is able to put in 1 hour of effort and get, say, more marks compared to another student who is putting in 3 hours of efforts? The world is filled with so many paradoxes that not every time do we see the result being directly proportional to the effort being put in. And that can get very discouraging to a person. Say, if I put in a lot of effort, I may not mind the other thing, that I don't put in effort and I just come out lucky and I win. I win a lottery, I have not done anything. But why does a person who has been buying lottery tickets sincerely for the last 10 years does not win a lottery? No explanation. He has put in effort for 10 years, I have not done anything. So I feel at that, even if I am a person who believes 100% in effort, prayer gives me strength to change the things that I can. It gives me the acceptance.
That very famous quote, right?
Exactly.
There's a very famous quote.
God.
How does it go?
It goes as, God, give me the strength to change things that I can. Give me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, and give me the wisdom to know the difference between these two, what can be changed and what cannot. And I feel that is what prayer gives to a person who is 100% who believes that everything is based on action. When things go wrong this way or that, you know, when things go right, he gets the strength, I mean, from prayer to go on and further.
It's a very beautiful point, because what you're talking of, you know, you pray for discrimination. Once you know something is right, okay, you can put your effort in that direction. But to know that this is right and that is wrong, because it's a very, very shoddy line which divides the two, right?
Sometimes it becomes a very gray line, yeah, fine line.
A very fine line. And so this, to pray to know the difference, which is right and which is wrong.
Correct.
It's a very, very important thing. And the other thing, point which is coming up even as you're explaining this category of people or this particular category, is that there are a lot of people who even look at prayer as an effort. You know, if you look at somebody, maybe a rich person, and ask him that, how are you so rich? He say, I prayed for it. You know, we've seen that even with people with Swami, they believe that they got whatever they got from Swami because they prayed for it.
They prayed and yearned intensely for it.
So, you know, in a sense, you kind of believe that God has given it to you, but you believe that it is because of your effort.
Correct.
I have prayed for it, I have yearned for it, and to believe that, you know, that effort is...
If everything is dependent on effort, then better set aside some time for prayer, because that is also an effort that you have to make.
Exactly. I mean, whether you believe in grace or not, if you're a person who believes in 100% effort, all the more reason why you have to pray.
Because it is totally, the ball is in your court.
Exactly.
Because unless you pray, you're not going to get it, because everything depends on effort.
And I think for this category of people, Swami often says, no, ask and it shall be given, knock and it shall, the doors will open. And there's a saying which is very popular. They say that even a mother will not give you food if you don't ask.
And the baby cries out.
Yeah, Swami says
pleads.
That, so if you want, you have to ask. Then the other category of...
Yeah, what about that, Prem? What about those of us who at some point in our time feel that something depends partially on how we act and partially on destiny, that is?
This might be the largest cross-section of the people.
Correct.
Because, falling in this.
Exactly. Because after putting in the best efforts also, sometime when it goes wrong, everybody raises up their hand and resigns to fate and says, hey, this is just fate, I can't do anything about it. So I think this is the biggest section of people who believe in both, who believe that life is a mixture of both effort and destiny, and therefore how prayer helps this kind of people is very important, I feel.
And also, you know, the aspect of fear plays a very, very big part in this category, if you see, because you're scared not to pray. And you're scared not to do anything also, because you're not that you're going to sit back and say that I'm not going to put any self-effort, what needs to come to me will come to me. Because you have the fear that, what if I have to do something?
Correct. So, yeah, it brings in, you know, both those fears. I can't simply sit because I feel that, you know, my actions do play a role in getting me what I need. And I simply can't keep putting actions because...
Who knows?
God's grace is... You know, actually Swami narrates a story over here, you know. It's a Chinnakatha. He says about a cart man. He is attending a satsang, a parayan by a guru who's teaching, who says that the Lord will never abandon one who seeks his help.
Okay.
The Lord will always come to your help. The cart man, you know, his job is to transport goods from one village to other, and he earns his livelihood that way. So, that day what happens, he's very inspired by this, and as he's transporting, it starts raining heavily, the road becomes slushy, it's not a tarred road, it's a village road, dirt road, it gets slushy and the wheel of the cart gets stuck in a pothole on the road. And now the cart is not moving, the bullocks are not able to pull the cart, so he doesn't know what to do. He remembers his guru's words that pray and the Lord will, you know, the Lord will never forsake you in the time of your need. So he sits and starts praying, God, come, God. And he's praying for the Lord to help, and hours pass and nothing seems to happen. And he's thinking, how is it? My guru can't tell a lie. And in the rain, his guru is walking. And you know, he's not worried about the guru is getting wet in the rain or anything like that. His thing is, Guru, you told me that if you pray to God, the Lord comes to help. I've been praying. And the guru tells, you have been praying, but what effort have you put in? The cartman is surprised because he feels that prayer is all the effort that he has to put in. So he says, you put in your effort, you do your best, God will do the rest. And so, as Swami completes the story, he says the cartman jumps off the cart with a prayer on his lips. You know, as Swami says, Dil mein Ram, haath mein kaam. You know, the Lord's name is in your heart and you start doing the work. He starts pushing at one of the wheels. And Swami says that he was praying to Lord Rama. He was telling Rama, come and help me, Rama, come and help. So he says, Rama sends Hanuman, the monkey god, you know, who is considered as a very muscular and powerful athletic god. So Hanuman comes and pushes at the other wheel. And this person, when he's pushing one of the wheels, he feels that there is some invisible force that is pushing the cart along with him. And the cart comes out of the mud. So here it is, means you need effort as well as prayer.
It's an interesting thing actually. Very interesting that you mentioned the story with Hanuman, because another story which Swami often narrates, which also involves characters of Hanuman and the other characters in the Ramayana, is when Hanuman goes in search of Sita to Lanka. So when he's going around and he's seeing all these palaces which are overflowing with affluence and indulgence, he sees that there is one particular palace which is kind of vibrating goodness, vibrating good vibes. And there he finds Vibhishana is sitting and chanting the name of the Lord.
Vibhishana, the younger brother of Deman Ravana.
And he's surprised that in the Asura kingdom, there is one who is actually doing Namasmarana. So he goes to him, and that is how they first time they meet. And Vibhishana's kind of he's not able to do anything about Sita being imprisoned in Lanka and all that.
So that, in fact, Swami says that Vibhishana asks a question of Hanuman. He asks, why is it that I am not able to have the darshan of Lord Rama? I incessantly chant his name. In fact, he compares himself to Hanuman.
Exactly.
He says, Hanuman, what is the difference between you and me? You chant Lord Rama's name every time. I chant Lord Rama's name every time. Why is it that you have the proximity with Lord Rama while I am not able to meet him? And then Hanuman responds saying, you are chanting his name, but are you doing his work? And then it is so evident, because from across the ocean, Hanuman has come in search of Sita. And Sita, who is just living next door to Vibhishana, she is suffering there, and Vibhishana has not done anything to help her out in any way. And once Vibhishana realizes this, he starts to take action also. He goes and speaks out against his brother, telling him that it is wrong. And when his brother refuses to relent, he even forsakes his own brother.
That is when he is thrown out of the kingdom and
he gets to be at the feet of Lord Rama. When you take the Lord's name and also do his work, then you automatically get God.
And it's a very important point. It kind of, you know, reiterates the point that God's grace will definitely come, but don't rule out the option that you might be a channel of that grace.
Correct.
You know, there's this famous story of a man who sees a poor girl shivering in the cold. Have you heard that story?
No.
He's walking in the middle of the night down the road, and it's a cold wintry night, and he finds a very small girl, homeless, sitting in the corner, and she's not able to bear the biting cold, so she's hungry and she's cold. With a very thin sheet, she's just covered herself. And this man, who is a very devout person, he sees this girl and says, God, how can you do this? You know, she's such an innocent child. I can understand if somebody has done a crime and you're punishing them for that, but this is such an innocent child. Why is she hungry, and why haven't you done anything for her? And he goes and sleeps, and that night her dream comes, and the God comes and tells him, who said I've not done anything? I've created you.
You were to be the channel of my love,
and
my channel of my peace, grace. Channel of my grace for that girl.
And immediately he rushes the next day, goes in search of that girl and gives her food and clothing, and ever since, you know, that becomes the mission of his life. So,
Correct. This
thing of what you told about Vibhishana, I think is the same thing. It's praying for something to happen, but at the same time, maybe
not ruling out the possibility that we ourselves might be the channel
of that.
And so I feel, you know, for people, those who believe partially in effort and partially in destiny, or for any one of us who believe in both, when our prayers get answered, when we pray for something and put an effort towards it and it gets answered, we get humility, because we realize that, you know, the Lord, out of His love and mercy, has turned this in our favor this time. So automatically humility comes in. At the same time, when we put in our efforts towards something and pray for it and the prayer is not answered, automatically I think surrender comes in.
Because yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, you're overwhelmed by the mystery because you feel that everything is done right.
Everything has been done right and yet it didn't.
I've done my part, you know, by means of action, and I've also prayed. But still, if it is not working out, then the Lord might know better, and you know,
the Lord
does know better, and He's doing what is exactly right.
So that answers the question for the 50-50 category.
And that's a very important point. Other point which you made was being a channel for His love, and I think that itself is a beautiful prayer, right? And it reminds me of the prayer of Saint Francis of Assisi.
Ah, yes.
Very, very beautiful prayer. And
make me a channel of Your peace.
Yeah, and it's a perfect description of this category, I feel, where you also pray and you're also willing to put yourself effort. So, it's a way of saying that let's work together.
Correct. Work together hand in hand with God.
Exactly. And I have a very beautiful song here. It's a musical representation of that prayer by St. Francis of Assisi. So maybe before we go ahead, we'll just listen to that song.
Oh, definitely.
Lord, make me an instrument of Your peace. Make me an instrument of Your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. Lord, make me an instrument of Your peace. 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 Grant that I may not seek so much to be consoled as to console, and to be understood as to understand, and to be loved as to love. Lord, make me an instrument of Your peace. 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 And it is in giving that we receive, and it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Lord, make me an instrument of Your peace. Make me an instrument of Your peace. Amen.
Awesome. You know, that's the word. So beautiful that how many more times you hear this prayer, the feeling that it leaves you with is incredible.
Even as I was hearing it, I was also just, you know, in spirit with the prayer, because this was a prayer that we used to do even in school, and
yeah,
I guess there are many variants of the same, but the spirit is the same. the wordings were different, and the prayer itself, you know, showed both these aspects of effort and destiny, kind of. The fact that it's a prayer shows that it's praying. At the same time, it says that it's only when you pardon that you get pardoned, which shows the importance of action.
Action. And the also, the point where it says that, you know, let me not seek love as much as I give love. So if you look at it as seeking love is a kind of grace falling upon you, and giving love is your action. So it is almost like, let me be a channel more than me being a receiver.
Recipient. Hmm.
So it's a very beautiful prayer.
Very lovely prayer. Which brings us to the third category. Let's not forget that at times when we feel that everything is just distant, there's nothing we can do about it. We most of us feel this at certain points, certain times in our life. And there are some who believe that whole life is nothing but destiny. There's nothing that is there as self-effort. I feel in such instances and to such people, need not emphasize what is the importance of prayer. Because if you feel that nothing is in your hands, and if you feel that everything is in God's hands, and prayer is a way of communication with God, we better pray.
Talking of it as a period of time each one of us go through, I think it's maybe in a very, very short period that we get to do this, to believe in God completely. And I think in the positive sense, it's complete surrender.
And usually it happens after you have done your best. You've tried everything possible, usually. And then nothing seems to be working out. That is when you feel that, you know, it's all fate, it's all destiny, there's nothing I can do about it.
And, you know, the most beautiful example, even as we're discussing this, what comes to my mind is that of the Princess Draupadi, when she's being dishonored in the court of the Kauravas. This happens in the Mahabharata war. And, you know,
before the Mahabharata war.
Yeah, before the Mahabharata war. I mean, in the story of Mahabharata, one of the very important points, important scenes, which actually is the cause for the many events that follow. And even in this, when she's being dishonored, they try to disrobe her. She cries out to her husbands. She cries out and she kind of argues her point, why she is not
anyway related to,
and rightfully she's not supposed to be given this treatment what she's undergoing. And that's self-effort. But finally, when she connects to the Lord in prayer, the description, if you see in the Bhagavatam, it doesn't say that she seeks Krishna to come and help her. She connects to Krishna. And it's almost at the point where she says that if this is your will, fine. And that is the time when, you know, Krishna, when she identifies her completely with Krishna, I think it almost becomes like injury to my devotees and injury to me. So I think that time the response is even faster. So actually they say that when Krishna comes and helps her, that what is described as that unending flow of sari and garment to protect her honor, she's actually totally unaware of what is happening.
That takes us back again to the definition of prayer as such. We often take prayer to be a way of communicating or asking God something. But prayer ultimately becomes just being in sync with God. If you're in sync with God, that's all it is about prayer. And it is so important in our lives. Swami narrates another chinna katha, you know, about a doctor. A doctor who used to spend half an hour every day in prayer. All his educated friends, all of them used to say that, you know, if you work this half an hour extra, you can earn more or you can do more. Why do you waste your time in prayer? In order to emphasize their point onto him, they said, say, half an hour a day equals almost 15 hours a month, which is about, say, 180 hours a year. And that's about 180,000 years if you live 100 hours in case you live 100 years. You know, they did this calculation this way and said, see, suppose God does not exist, all these hours have gone down the drain. Then the doctor tells back, he hits back, he says, I agree to that. But just imagine if God exists, then imagine your whole lives would have been a waste. I have at least spent half an hour fruitfully every day. Your whole life is a waste if God exists. So, being in sync with God, I'm talking very practically. I mean, even if I don't believe, even if I'm not sure whether God exists or not, from an insurance point of view, from a risk-taking point of view, it's better to diversify and, yeah, spend some time and effort, spend some time in prayer, being in sync with
and
God.
It's a very, very one-dimensional idea to think, the way you said, you know, if you could spend even this time in work, how much more you can do. There's a very interesting analogy which they say that when you want to chop an oak tree, you know, the oak trees are typically huge. The width trunk of the bark, the trunk is very huge. So if you want to chop an oak tree, and let's say you have 6 hours to chop it down. If every 1 hour you are ready to stop and sharpen the axe, you can chop down the tree faster.
Than going on continuously with the blunt axe.
Somebody says that, you know, the time which you spend in sharpening the axe, why don't you keep chopping the tree? And the other analogy which I read long back which says is, when you take a ship out into the ocean, and when it's been sailing for so many months, it collects all these, you know, the organic matter which is there in the ocean.
Floating alga.
Yeah, the algae and the fungi and all get stuck to the bottom of the ship. And you know how they remove it? Because that kind of makes the ship heavier with every journey. So you know how they remove it is, when they bring it back to the shore, the backwaters, which is comparatively less salty, they just go and dock the ship over there.
Okay.
And automatically this just falls off when you dock it there for a couple of weeks. So they say prayer is a means of that. You know, if you look at our daily worldly activity as going out into the ocean, the kind of stresses which we collect over the period of time, the kind of impressions which keep adding on to it, I think prayer is a moment when you can just let go of all these things.
When
you just ease yourself.
When you're in sync with God, your higher self, your own inner self. And finally, when it boils down to belief, Prem, I feel no amount of explanation or discussion will help. Everybody must once just indulge in prayer. You know, I'm reminded of an episode that happened in my own life. There was a sister, a Sai sister, and she got a little shaken hearing to so many things about, you know, Swami and the negative things about Swami.
Which is more easier to listen to.
If you're, I mean, you go onto the internet, and that is what the media also tries to sensationalize, and it actually shook her. So much so, she said, it's not that I'm against Swami, but I don't know, somehow I don't feel like praying to Swami here. So, when I heard this, I was a little hurt because, you know, we often feel that what we enjoy, we want our loved ones also to enjoy. So, here was somebody whom I loved so much and Swami is the love of my life. And now she is telling that I don't want to talk about Swami. But she said one thing, that you please continue to tell me about Swami. So when I used to speak to her about Swami, always in the back of my mind it used to be that, you know, she doesn't believe in Swami.
She doesn't accept
Swami.
What you're saying.
She's having doubts. So it used to be so tough to speak out. Because, you know, when you speak to a receptive audience, it is so easy to bring Swami out.
Exactly.
But I don't know, one day, in a fit of inspiration, I'm sure it is definitely only Swami's work. Because Swami has said inspiration is Him. I told her, next time when you are in a dire crisis, just call out to Swami and tell Him whatever you want. He will respond instantaneously and then you will believe. I don't know what made me tell that statement. And it so happened that years passed, and over the years, you know, things happen in between two people in their understanding. So for some reason, you know, we were not on talking terms with each other. She was upset with me, I was upset with her. We had stopped talking to each other. It was long forgotten. Out of the blue one day, I don't know why, I get an urge to call her. I do not know why it is, and it just comes so strongly to me. So I decide to go and call her. I call her also. I can hear her cell phone ring. And as I hear the cell phone ring, all the, you know, that the memories that, you know, I'm upset with her, I'm not talking with her, she's not talking, why, all that comes flooding back in a moment, and instantly I just cut the call.
Okay.
That's it. That's all, it's over. The next day she calls me and her voice is trembling with excitement. Then I wonder what has happened. She says, you tell me, why did you call me yesterday? Now what do I tell her? Because I really don't know why I called her yesterday. I just had called, felt like calling, so I just called. So I said, I don't know why I called you. And then she revealed something terrible that had happened in her sister's life. And she revealed that. And after revealing it, she said, when I got to know this, I don't know, I felt like speaking to you. though we had been disconnected for so many years, she said, I felt like speaking to you. And at that time she said, she remembered what I had said, that if you have anything, you pray to Swami, he'll respond. So she says, I prayed, I said, Swami, if you are listening, let Arvind call me now. And then she says, I opened my handbag to see that I had forgotten my cell phone at home. And so she rushed back home and she sees that exactly at around that time, around 4:30 or 4:45 in the evening, there's a missed call from me. And she is so thrilled and she says, wow, Swami listens. What I'm trying to say is that how much ever we may discuss about prayer and being connected to God, it comes to you praying and then experiencing the power of prayer. And after that, even if the whole world tells anything, nothing is going to shake you off. So I feel each one of us, in our own way, pray. Whether it's asking, whether it is thanksgiving, whether it is simply connecting to God, whether it's communicating, whether it's whatever. Whatever is our concept of prayer, with all sincerity and love, let us just pray once and see. I am 100% sure, because Swami has said any prayer reaches and God responds to every prayer without fail. Let us just pray and see the effect of prayer, how instantaneously it works. And after that, all the discussion will just become meaningless.
And you know, it is said that it just takes one call. God is just one call away. And we often wonder that we have called out to Him so many times. Okay, but there's something interesting that somebody said was, yes, it takes just one call to call God. But to get that emotion, to make that one call effective, it takes a lifetime of prayer. You know, it's like they say that you can know how well a man has lived his life if you see him, how he dies. Okay, so to have a good death, it takes a lifetime of effort. So it's almost like that, you know.
This argument is like saying, I'll tell you, all that you need to get an Olympic medal is to just lift up 350 kilograms.
It's like if you want to win the Olympic 100 meters, all you have to do is beat the man who's coming second.
That's it. If you want an Olympic medal, just lift 400 kilograms. You'll be the champion. You can't just walk out there and lift 400 kilograms unless you have been lifting weights all your life to get that intensity. You know, Swami often tells this story. He says that there is a story, you know, I forget the name, in the Vishnu Purana. About what is the devotee's name? You know, they say that he calls out to Narayana in his last, I forget his name. You know, when he is dying, when he's about to die, his son's name is Narayana. So he calls out, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. And then it is said that when the Yamadutas came to pick up, that is the messengers of death came to pick up this man.
The man. Okay.
The messengers of Lord Narayana come and say that he has taken the name of the Lord. You can't touch him. So this story is narrated with the intent that if even by mistake, if you call the Lord's name is so powerful that it will take you from death to immortality. And then Swami says that there was a person who you know, smart guy.
Names six sons.
He has four sons and he names them Rama, Krishna, Govinda, Narayana. He says that when I die, I'm going to call out my sons. So
whichever son I call out, I'll be calling out
the Lord's name, so I'll be saved. And what happens is, on his deathbed, he does the same. He calls out Rama, Krishna, Govinda, Narayana.
All the
four of them come. Suddenly looks at them and tells, you fools, you are all here. Who is taking care of the shop? And then he dies. So Swami says, he says that unless you have had a lifetime of practice in prayer and being in touch with the Lord, it's not easy to just, you know, pick
it up. That's the important thing. Now, when Swami says that story of the man who by mistake called Lord and the Lord's sevaks were there to save him, it was to show the importance of the Lord's name. But we take it as it is enough even if we do it by mistake.
By mistake if we do it in the end.
But what take is the wrong message.
What is the chance? If you want to be 100% sure at redemption, will you take a chance like this?
Yeah, you know, there's a beautiful thing which Swami says, that if there's a dark room, okay, and someone walks in and switches on the light, even few fractions of a second before the light came on, there's darkness. And he said, like that in life, when you're going through a dark phase, maybe the light, the brightness is just a step away. But if you lose hope even in that moment, you've lost it.
Correct.
And then that brings the point of, you know, faith being such a important aspect of prayer. While asking in prayer itself, if you believe that it's not going to be answered, I think it's half defeated already.
Perfect.
And also because, you know, the other point is, if you believe that everything is predestined, you know, it's not that I need to pray to make it happen. But prayer is kind of makes you prepare for whatever is going to happen. You know, when we talk about humility, it's like, okay, let me say that I pray, there are people who want to join Swami's university. I pray to get in. So if I get in, I feel that I've prayed for it and got it. It's Swami's grace. But if I don't get in, again, that idea that, yeah, there is a reason why Swami is not giving me. Okay, so whatever is the eventuality, you are prepared to accept it. You are prepared to face it.
And that, as you said, depends on your faith. It depends totally on faith. And that is the reason, you know, why I feel that we should try it out once. Try it out and get our experience and our own understanding of praying.
That's very important. You know, that's one thing which we never do. Because if you look at science, if you look at how we believe in science, we actually have blind faith on science.
Correct. Really.
You know, if Einstein says that this is how the... I can give the whole universe in this equation, we accept it.
Accept.
I mean, are we going out and trying it out ourselves?
How many of us have experimented on E equal to MC square?
Exactly.
We've just taken it.
How many of us have even calculated the speed of light? Of course, there are some experiments, but how many of us have, you know, it is like, you know, how we do it. Talking of the speed of light, there are some physics experiments by which you can calculate the speed of light. You know what is the speed of light.
Okay.
That is given in the textbook. And invariably, we'll never get that figure. And we kind of say that, yeah, I'm almost close to it.
That's
so
right.
We are actually not experimenting the fact which is given to you. You're just seeing how well am I able to match up to it.
Exactly. But when it comes to spirituality, you have so many sages, so many saints, so many masters saying it. And you see that their life, they're exhibiting it.
And we call that blind faith.
Really, it's just a matter of perspective. You know, Swami says, for a madman, the whole world appears mad. And for the world, the madman appears mad. Basically, both are true in their own sense.
There's a beautiful story which Swami says about, you know, what it is to be a guru. There's a Chinnakatha. I don't remember whether it's a Chinnakatha or it's a story which I read when I was a kid. You know, a man who's actually a thief, who repents for the life he's led, goes to a guru. And the guru gives him a vision. Okay? And it seems that vision changes his life. So in that vision, he's transported to a island. And the specialty of this island is everybody in that island is blind.
Okay,
and he, as a result of a shipwreck, lands in that island, and he's the only one who has a vision. So he goes around and he's surprised that everybody, men, women and children, all are blind. So when they see that here is a person who has an extra faculty, you know, he's able to see, the concept of seeing itself is not there in that kingdom. So they take him to the king. You know, he becomes like a grand man, he's a special man. So he's taken to the king. The king honors him, gives him a special seat in the palace, and they bring him a bowl of fruits. They say, this is the most precious fruit of this island. And we give it to all our guests who come. So this man eats that fruit and he becomes blind.
Okay,
and then he realizes that it's because of this fruit that all of them are blind. And then he lives in that kingdom as a blind man. So one day he, you know, chances upon a tree, which is kind of a forbidden tree. So they all tell him that, see, that tree has got poisonous fruits. So don't go near it. And one day he just wants to try it out. These people are saying that this is a delicacy and that's giving blindness. Let's see what's the poisonous tree doing. And he eats the poisonous tree and he gets back his vision. And you know, when this vision is given to the man, he realizes that we are accepting what everybody is accepting, without even trying whether this is the right or that is the right.
Personal experience is so important that, I don't know, somehow this satsang is turning out to be an analogy-filled satsang. I am reminded of an experiment, you know, about blindly following without experiencing on the own.
Okay.
This is a real experiment done in the real world to show how life goes on, you know. 6 monkeys were put in a cage and there was a bunch of bananas hung in the cage, and there's a ladder leading up to the bananas. What will any monkey do? Climb the ladder and pick the bananas. Now, what the researchers did was, every time a monkey climbed up to snatch the bananas, the other 5 monkeys in the cage were splashed with ice cold water.
Okay.
So the other monkeys did not know what's happening. They just knew that if any one of us touches the banana, the other five of us had it. So the next time when any monkey went to take a banana, these other five would fight and tear that monkey down, pull it down. And so this became the training for all the six monkeys. Now, though the bananas are hanging in the cage, none of the monkeys go to pull the bananas because the others don't allow them. But the others don't allow it because they're going to get splashed with ice cold water. Now what they did was, they pulled out one monkey and replaced it with a fresh monkey.
Mm-hmm.
Now this fresh monkey has no training, it knows nothing. As soon as it came, it saw the bananas, it went for the bananas. It got a rude shock when all the other five monkeys came, did not touch the banana, but pulled it down and thrashed it and did not allow it. It tried 2-3 times and when it got bashed up so badly, it decided that I must not climb and became one among them. The second monkey was replaced. When the second monkey was replaced, the fresh monkey that came, mm-hmm. it ran for the bananas. Now the four monkeys went and thrashed it. Now this newcomer did not know and thought, oh, this is a norm maybe. I went for the banana, I got thrashed. Whoever goes for the banana get thrashed. So in this way, it joined the other four monkeys and so now five monkeys thrashed the second new monkey.
But the actual experience was only with the three of them.
With four of them.
Four of them.
But the other two learned the habit. Towards the end of the experiment, all the six monkeys had been replaced. Now there were six monkeys in the cage, none of whom had ever received a drop of cold water on their back. But none of them would approach the bananas. Why? Because if one of them approached the banana, other five would thrash them up. No reason, nothing understood. This is what happens when you blindly follow without experience. And we have people coming and speaking to the devotees who have had experience, simply shouting out, saying, this is foolishness, there is no God existing. Have you ever tried God? Have you even tried science? Science, though, if you have faith in science, you don't have faith in God. How foolish it is.
And Swami often says, no, even when you go to a barber, he comes to you with a knife and a scissor, but you have faith in him. But when it comes to God, you have all your reservations.
Another anecdote of a scientist traveling the train, I think we recounted it once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he tells a person, you come home, we'll have a discussion, and since it's a big scientist, he decides, I'll go and meet the scientist. Because this scientist in the train opens a Bible to read it, and the other person says that, you know, it's stupid.
Being a scientist,
believing in the Bible, it's all stupid, it's not nothing. He criticizes so much, so the scientist says, come over home, let's talk at home. So when he goes home, this person visiting the scientist sees a beautiful model of the universe, you know,
mm-hmm.
that has been set out there, and he's in awe and wonder, and he says, wow, did you make this? Because it's very good. He says, no, I didn't make it. I don't know, it was not there, it appeared today morning here. Then he says, you must be nuts. How can a model of the universe appear out of nowhere? He says, when you feel that the universe itself appeared out of nothing, it just came up like that, and you do not believe that there can be a creator for the universe, then why can't you believe that a model can come up without having a creator? That unscientific is science, but when it comes to spirituality, it is foolishly masked in the veil of rationality and said that it's irrational.
The construed belief, actually.
We've gone off the topic. Yeah. I agree.
Before we come back to the topic, I'll just tell another thing about prayer, because you mentioned about that monkey experiment. In biology, there's a very famous experiment we all come across, you know, that dog bone and the bell.
Correct, the Pavlov experiment.
Yeah, Pavlov, that's the word. A bone is given to a dog, and every time a bone is given, a bell is rung. What happens when a dog sees a bone? It's alive. So it so happens that the two events, the dog being given a bone and the bell being rung, is repeated over so many times. So it so happens that every time the bell is rung, and even if the bone is not given, the dog starts to salivate.
Hmm.
Okay, and that is what they say, that the situation in which a particular event happens can actually simulate the same reactions even when the situation is not complete.
Correct.
And right, this is a very important point, you know, when we think why we have this habit of lighting incense sticks, why we have the habit of doing a certain set of rituals in the temple.
Hmm.
Because if you look at it, you know, every time you go into a temple, there is a particular ambience, there is a smell, there is a particular, you know,
feel
of it. It so happens that when you give that feel to a person, he automatically gets to a state where he can connect to God.
You know, today morning it happened, when we were going in the car, we were hit by a smell of jasmine,
mm-hmm.
and somebody said, wow, you know, it feels like as if Swami is here. The smell of jasmine flower has got associated, just like, you know, Pavlov's dog, as you said. And that is why these rituals are done, some of these rituals, to create that atmosphere, because that smell, that sight, that sound reminds us of God.
Exactly. That's the mystery.
Get us back in sync with God.
Exactly.
And that is what we termed as prayer.
So, Arvind, and I think at this point we will have to conclude this section on prayer by saying that it is kind of, whether we accept it or not, prayer does have benefits in whichever state of evolution, spiritual evolution you are in. So,
correct.
Before we take this discussion forward, let's break and listen to a nice song. It's a beautiful song. It just says that, you know, how can we describe God?
जैसे बताए हम कितने धन्य, जैसे सुनाए भाग्य हमारे, जैसे बताए हम कितने धन्य, जैसे सुनाए भाग्य हमारे, साई के रूप में
back, dear listeners, and before we proceed ahead in this afternoon satsang, one or two points that slipped out from our minds. Well, the first thing is that story that we mentioned of, you know, Lord Narayana and that devotee
calling out to Lord
Narayana
last moment by mistake.
That is famous as the story of Ajamila, Ajamila.
Mm-hmm.
That's the story. It can be simply googled and you can find it out. Then the other thing is, you know, one interesting observation that comes out, all the chinnakathas and stories that we narrated till now, all of them Swami has narrated, you know. And many times it happens that we pick out one or two stories which seem to contradict each other. We pick out one or two teachings of Swami which seem to contradict each other and wonder which one do we follow. Swami has to cater to such a wide, diverse audience and to diverse evolutionary levels. And that is why he communicates in so many different kinds of stories. Because here we saw, to elucidate for those who believe 100% in effort, we used some stories. To elucidate for those who believe partially in effort and partially in destiny, some other stories. And finally, those who believe completely in destiny, some other stories. All the stories are inspired and told by Swami. So that is an interesting thing that we observe, that the stories and teachings seem in apparent contradiction because they are meant for people at different stages of evolution. And what inspires us is meant for us because each story inspires perfectly to those people who are in that stage of evolution.
And Swami often says that for the same set of symptoms, the doctor might give different medicines.
We have discussed that.
Because it is, you know, after all, it is absolutely perfectly customized for each one.
Correct. Moving ahead, you know, we discussed about how beautiful and wonderful prayer is and how each one must learn for himself or herself by experiencing it firsthand, praying and checking it out, trying it out. You know, Prem, oftentimes we have come across Swami emphasizing on the importance of praying for others rather than praying for oneself. I've seen, for example, one of my classmates, he was sitting in the darshan line and he observed that Swami picked letters from some members, some of the devotees sitting in the first line. And he saw one poor peasant, maybe. He was poorly dressed, he looked also poor, and he was stretching out a letter from the fourth line. And Swami ignored. And Swami then walked ahead. This boy started praying, Swami, why did you, you know, pick up that poor peasant's letter? Please, Swami, because our compassion goes based on how a person looks, how a person, it's based on the body and the mind and not on the soul, you know. So his heart melted and he was thinking, Swami, please pick that letter. All of a sudden, Swami stopped, turned around, walked to this peasant, picked up the letter and went ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And this boy felt so happy. And then during the same darshan round, Swami came towards the students, searched out for this boy, called him and said, are you happy? He asked him. Only this boy knew what Swami was referring to because for all the others, it was just Swami calling a random boy and asking, are you happy? So as you see, like this, there are many instances where Swami apparently has promoted or encouraged and in fact answered prayers when it's done for others rather than for oneself. I believe that, you know, I feel I always will pray for others and request others to pray for me in return because I feel when others pray for me, whenever my mother prays for me, it happens, I feel. But when I pray the same for myself, it doesn't happen to me. So, haven't you
There's some
the same?
Magic in the selflessness, I think.
Yes.
But again, you know, it's again a very, very precarious placed decision to make because so many times Swami would say that, who are you to ask?
Who are you to recommend for
recommend. And if you read Kasturi's autobiography, I think on many occasions he has faced Swami's wrath in that. Where he would go and ask for somebody and Swami would say, but I think that is the catch in that, where your prayer is absolutely selfless and it is coupled with the feeling that Swami will do what is good for that person. I think that is when it actually is perfect, when you pray for others. And talking of praying for others, I am reminded of a beautiful incident which happened, which is narrated by one of our seniors. You know, it happened in the old Vrindavan time. It was the year 1976, you know, when there was this huge flood in the Godavari region.
Okay.
And I think one of the first very, very major relief activities was taken up by the Seva organization was during that floods. During that time, when Swami was in Vrindavan, one particular Brahmin had come from that region. And she came to one of our lecturers, who is now retired. He came and told him that, see, I've lost everything in the floods. And I don't want anything. I have a son whose Upanayanam I want to do. And I need only 2,000 rupees, the thread ceremony. Because, you know, see the thinking of this person, he has lost everything. What is important to him was to take the tradition forward. He wanted to do the thread ceremony for his son. So he said, can you pray on my behalf to Swami to give me that 2,000 rupees?
Okay.
I've come here only for that. I've come seeking for that. So this person felt that there was nothing impure in the feelings of this Brahmin, but he told him that I cannot ask Swami because Swami doesn't accept it, because every person can reach out to Swami personally. So I cannot ask.
And in fact, Swami discourages Swami somebody asking on somebody else's behalf.
Unless you are given a permission to do that.
Correct.
You know, some people are put in such situation where you can ask on behalf of others, but otherwise Swami always discourages it. So this person rightly declined, very politely, and he said, I will definitely pray for you. When I'm in Swami's presence, I will, you know, put your request as a prayer mentally, but physically I cannot ask Swami. And he said, I'm sure that Swami will come and help you because your motive is so pure. The scene shifts to inside the safe room. In the old bungalow, there was this thing called safe room where Swami was sitting. There were some students around Swami and there were some devotees. And that day, the topic was money.
Okay.
And Swami said, money is like water. As long as it is flowing, it will be pure. If it starts accumulating in one place and stagnates there, then it starts smelling. So we said, money also is like that. If it comes to you, you have to give it to somebody. Then it will come. And there will be always a flow. Okay. And even as Swami was telling this, Swami was, you know, going through the letters which he had got. And he picked up one envelope. And then Swami told the story of how this Brahmin came and asked Lakshmi Narasimhan sir, who is the person to whom he came and requested. And Swami said that, you know, nothing happened physically. The lecturer did not come and ask Swami. But what happened that day, Swami came out, was going out for darshan, and he had something in his hand, went around for his darshan, went straight to this Brahmin and gave him the money.
Okay.
And Swami is narrating this. See, like this Brahmin came and asked this person, and he prayed very sincerely to me. The Brahmin's prayer was sincere, and even this lecturer's prayer was sincere. So I decided to answer the prayer. Then Swami said, so I took 120 rupee notes. That's what Swami says.
Because 120 rupee.
Yeah, it's a very, very weird denomination that way. You know, Swami said, I took 120 rupee notes and put it in an envelope and gave it to that person. And even as Swami was describing this, Swami was going through the letters and he picked up one envelope. And Swami said, what did I give that man? I gave him 120 rupee notes. And see what I have here. Swami opened the envelope and in that there were 120 rupee notes.
Or somebody had given it.
Somebody had given it to Swami when Swami was going for darshan. Swami said, see, I gave, I got. Okay? And even as Swami was saying this, Swami opened the envelope and distributed the money to everybody who was sitting there.
Okay.
Swami said, see, like this, money has to keep flowing. Of course, the lesson was that, but if you see this, that person actually was praying for the other. And I think it automatically is a sincere prayer when you have nothing to benefit from it. You know, that selflessness automatically makes a prayer pure. And that might be a reason why praying for others is a very, very effective way of making the other person's prayer being answered.
I also feel, you know, when you pray for the other and there is no benefit for you directly on the face of it, it actually inculcates selflessness in you.
True.
Because you are praying for no selfish interest. Nothing of yours is getting fulfilled and yet you are praying. And this selflessness actually benefits us tremendously, because it is selflessness that takes us closer towards our ultimate reality, which is God. And when we reach that reality, we are able to see oneness in everybody. We are able to feel oneness with everybody. And the first step towards feeling that oneness with everybody is selflessness. Is I don't care whether it benefits you or me. I feel the same joy whether it benefits you or whether it benefits me. That is a precursor to my acceptance that it is the same, because you and me are no different. You and me are one. We are God. So praying for others brings selflessness, which in turn helps us achieve the ultimate goal in life, which is the greatest benefit for us. So actually, if you see, you know, paradoxically, selflessness is the greatest selfishness. Because by being selfless, we are benefiting ourselves so tremendously.
You know, if you look at it in a very gradual sense, suppose I'm at home, it's understood that my happiness depends on the happiness of people around me in the house. So it is quite obvious that when I know that if I'm praying for my member in a family, it is understood that my happiness depends on them. So when you start praying for others, it is kind of, you know, very, very subtly you're accepting that my happiness, my well-being depends on so many other people.
There was this farmer in the United States, and his corn fields, you know, used to always win the annual award for the best corn in the region.
Okay.
And this farmer had a very strange habit. Every year he's a winner, and after that, when it comes to selling the corn, he sells away the low quality corn. He sells away every other corn, but the best corn, he keeps some for him to sow for the next season. And the remaining, he distributes it to all the other farmers.
The good one.
The best one. And so then, you know, people thought that, you know, he's eating into his own victory. Because, you know, if he distributes the best corn to other farmers, they have got a chance to now grow the best corn and win it. But this farmer's logic, you know, he said, see, when I am growing my corn, the pollination, you know, the seeding happens by the birds and the bees. And if the neighboring farmers do not grow good quality corn, my farm, my corn is going to get mated with lower quality corn, and I will end up with low quality corn. So the only way to ensure that every bird and every bee that comes into my field brings the best quality seeds and, you know, generation for the best quality generation to proceed ahead, I should ensure that all the neighboring farmers too grow the best quality corn. And so while the world considered it as a great selfless act, you know, if you see in one angle, it's a very selfish act. So that is where, you know, this kind of praying for others brings on such a great benefit onto oneself. Selflessness is actually the greatest self-interest.
And I think it will give such a humbling feeling also, you know, when you are doing seva, when you're doing something which is going to benefit others. It is one thing to think that I am giving, I am being beneficent to somebody, benevolent to somebody. Okay. But if you feel that, you know, finally I am doing it for myself, I think it will bring in a very, very sane sense of humility in you.
I'll tell you, you know, I think maybe to conclude, I'll quickly recount one beautiful experience that I had.
Okay.
This of, you know, praying for others. In the 1990s, when I was a student, it was a chance that the students had that whenever Swami materialized vibhuti for any devotee or anybody, a student having a white handkerchief could run up to Swami and offer the same for Swami to wipe his hands. You know, it's a great blessing because on the vibhuti, Swami's fingerprints would be there. Because he would wipe his fingers, vibhuti covered fingers on that cloth. So that vibhuti would get transferred to the cloth and you can preserve it that way. So I was one of these students who always carried a kerchief for Swami in my pocket, wishing to, you know, offer it to Swami if he created vibhuti. One day during the school hours, you know, it was a free class and there was no teacher in the class, and we were sitting and we were playing a game. And in the course of the game, you know, I saw one of the boy, one of the students, I felt that he was cheating a bit in the game. So involved I was in the game that I got angry. I hit him on the head, you know. I just hit him on the head and told, don't do that. And it was really a very spontaneous act, but an act of anger. The other boy, you know, surprisingly, he just rubbed his head. He was in pain. He just looked at me. He didn't speak anything. Maybe he knew that he was guilty of that, but he didn't retaliate. And that lack of retaliation made me feel even more horrible.
Exactly.
You know, you hit somebody and they hit you back, you feel it's all, account settled. But you hit somebody and somebody just gives a smile and, not a smile, I mean, just keeps silent, it makes you feel very bad. I mean,
it makes you feel very small.
Yeah, very small. And I felt very small. I wanted to make up with him, you know, I wanted to apologize in a special manner possible. And at that minute, a thought sprung in my head that today evening, if at all I get a chance to offer a handkerchief to Swami to wipe his hands after he creates vibhuti for any of the devotees, that handkerchief, I will give it to this boy. And then tell him, I'm sorry, you know. As an apology gift, I thought I'll give him this handkerchief. That evening, Prem, I don't know what to say, maybe for the first time in my life, on the same day, Swami accepted the handkerchief not once, but twice from me. Means, near me, Swami came and created vibhuti for some devotee on two occasions in the same evening. And twice I could get the handkerchief blessed. And I gave the handkerchief to the other boy. But today when I look back at that episode, I think, look at that. Even when I had prayed, the maximum I had got was once, one chance to give Swami the handkerchief. And here, for the first time I had prayed because I wanted to give this handkerchief to the other boy. I had been benefited by getting two chances to go physically close to Swami and get the handkerchief blessed. I immediately felt that, wow, it's almost like you pray more for the others and you get benefited. And at that time, I got this thought. I prayed for one boy and I got double benefit. Imagine how it would be if I pray for all the boys. Imagine how it would be if I pray for all the boys and all the devotees in Kulwanthal. Then imagine how it would be if I pray for the whole world. How much more benefit we can get. And then when I see, I realize that that is exactly what Swami has been telling.
True.
He's been always saying, Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu, samasta loka sukhino bhavantu.
Yeah, and he always ingrained that in us without our knowledge. Now, now when we look at it, when I start expanding my circle of people who are essential to be happy, to make me happy, and when we start looking at it as, you know, spreading it to the whole world and say loka samasta, and spreading it beyond the world and say samasta loka, you realize that without our knowledge, Swami is actually bringing us to that consciousness of believing that all are one.
Correct.
We are one.
We are one, and therefore pray for the welfare of everyone. And you know, last week when we discussed, we were discussing about so many prophetic statements and so many dreams, visions of what's going to happen in the future. You know, we are nearing that so-called dreaded date.
Apocalypse.
Yeah, December 21st, which they say the Mayan calendar is ending and, you know, the world is going to come to a close. See, I don't know what that actually means. I'm not saying that it is true, nor am I saying that it is false. What I'm saying is, when that is the situation, I feel it's a very beautiful situation to start praying for the whole world. More than any other time in history, I feel it is now that we should all spend time, energy and our resources in samasta loka sukhino bhavantu, in our thought, word and deed.
And the other way of looking at it is, if you look at seva, like suppose you see somebody, there are people who go to the houses of the disabled and give them food. The idea of it is, there's somebody who cannot earn for themselves. I've earned more than I need. So let me go and give it to him. So similarly, if you look at it as prayer, there might be so many millions in this world who might not be in a frame of mind to pray.
Correct.
Why not I pray for them? And that is where this loka samasta or samasta loka sukhino bhavantu is so special, is so beautiful, and it's one of the most beautiful things which Swami has made us do.
You know, I remember that day, it was the Sai Sannidhi day. Sai Sannidhi, that is the name that all the students who are working in Swami's institutions at Puttaparthi, Prashanthi Nilayam, Vrindavan, they've all named themselves that way, Sai Sannidhi, which means proximity to Sai. So the Sai Sannidhi day, Swami was speaking to all these students who are employed in various of his institutions. It was on that day, I think in 2009, yes, 2009, that Swami changed the chant from Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu to Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. And you know the interesting thing here, Prem? In Sanskrit, the order of the subject, verb, object and predicate does not matter. Whether you tell Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu or Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu or Bhavantu Sukhina Samasta Loka, it all means the same.
It's not like in English or the other languages which we are using.
The order matters, and if you jumble up the order, the sentence becomes meaningless.
Where
if you say, let the world be happy, the world let be happy, the, if you say, it's meaningless. But in Sanskrit, that's the beauty of that language. It doesn't depend on the order of the words. As long as all the words are there, it makes the same meaning, because the case of each subject or object is attached along with the word. So, in any order, loka samasta sukhino bhavantu means may all the beings in the world be happy. So then, you know, we are wondering then why Swami made this change. Why did Swami make this change from loka samasta to samasta loka if both mean the same? Whether whatever they mean, Swami brought about a great change in consciousness. You know, everybody suddenly felt, oh my God, Swami is telling it's not enough if you do loka samasta. Swami is telling samasta loka means all, oh, okay, so we are supposed to pray for all.
I mean, kind of opens our understanding that there are so many lokas.
Yeah, so many lokas, and you know, people, though they are chanting the same thing, now they are chanting it with, hey, you know, Swami has said we have to pray for all. Hey, we are supposed to pray for all. That kind of feeling comes in whenever we chant samasta loka. So though Swami did not change anything in the meaning or the words, with that single act, the world over, he has changed the consciousness where he has shown that his emphasis is always on happiness for everybody. Because it is only in the happiness of everybody that I get my happiness.
You're talking with these lokas and many lokas. I'm reminded of one thing which happened, a very beautiful incident which happened when Swami called a few of us for an interview. That was before we all got our jobs. And Swami had always, you know, had his period of testing when he would say that I don't need anybody here. You are all done MSCs and MBAs. So I don't have jobs for you.
And oh, that used to be a beautiful dialogue. Swami
says, you had to fight your way.
Swami says, I have no need. Then the students answer back saying, Swami, you have no need, but we need you.
We want to be with you. So that was one of those times, you know, when Swami had actually called us inside to tell us that I don't have any jobs to give you. So this was the dialogue. Swami went on into a monologue trying to tell that you all have to go back and all that. And I mean, it's a beautiful thing. People might say that when Swami is telling you, you're disobeying. But you know, it is one time when Swami was telling, hoping that he is disobeyed. Literally like that. I mean, it's understood only between the people who were there and Swami.
And it's an experience.
It's an experience all by itself. So this was happening, and one of the boys who were there made bold to just tell a statement which was actually in all our minds. But he was bold enough to tell it to Swami. He said, Swami, we are not interested in the job. You give it whenever you want to give it to us. All that we ask is you come and speak to us every day. Come every day, speak to us. Just keep us in that relationship. That is all we want. And job, if you wish to give, you give. If you don't wish to give, you can keep us this way. And you know, that kind of resonated the feeling in all our hearts. But what Swami told immediately, you know, when you make an emotional statement like this, you expect that Swami will respond emotionally. But what Swami told was very beautiful. Swami said, నాకు ఏంటి వేరే పని లేదనుకున్నారా స్వామి ఆస్ డూ యూ థింక్ దట్ ఐ హావ్ నో అదర్ వర్క్ అండ్ స్వామి టోల్డ్ ఎ వెరీ వెరీ బ్యూటిఫుల్ స్టేట్మెంట్ స్వామి సెడ్ నేను ఎన్ని లోకాలు చూసుకోవాలి
హౌ మెనీ వరల్డ్స్
ఐ హావ్ టు టేక్ కేర్ ఆఫ్ యూ థింక్ ఐ హావ్ టైమ్ టు కమ్ అండ్ టాక్ టు యూ అండ్ యు నో ఇన్ దట్ మూమెంట్ ఆఫ్ డినైల్ స్వామి వాజ్ యాక్చువల్లీ డినైయింగ్ వాట్ యూర్ ప్రేయింగ్ ఫార్ బట్ ఇట్ యాక్చువల్లీ థ్రిల్డ్ ఆల్ ఆఫ్ అస్ బికాస్ స్వామి వాజ్ మేకింగ్ ఎన్ రెవల్యూషన్ విచ్ I mean, people who know Swami will know that it's not every day with Swami accepts what he is.
Maybe to conclude this satsang prem, this is almost like the, you know, food prayer that we do, you know, Brahma Arpanam Brahmahave. If you go through the meaning of the prayer, the food is Brahman, is being offered to Brahman and is being consumed by Brahman and it is getting changed into Brahman. It is everything, and that is what Swami does, you know. He's the one who receives the prayers. He's the one who is inspiring us to pray. He's the one who teaches us to pray. And he's the one who, you know, sits back and enjoys the prayer also. It is so beautiful, and we should just follow, you know. Follow what he says and know for sure that it is going to bring benefit and good all round. Like the one, again I restate that personal favorite statement of mine which hangs in the library at Vrindavan, which says God has a plan and that's all we need to know. So let's be in sync with God, which is nothing but praying. Praying is just being in sync with God. Let's be in sync with Him and let's pray worldwide. If all of us spend our time and energies in Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu, let us pray for the happiness and joy of all mankind. Because deep within our hearts, we will also know that when whole mankind benefits, we are definitely going to benefit.
And always let us make sure that, you know, in the prayer, as part of the prayer, very much ingrained in the prayer, be faith. Because there is no point in praying to Swami and not believing that it's going to happen. There's a wonderful quote which is said, that prayer knocks the doors of heaven. I don't know if you've heard that. It says, prayer knocks the doors of heaven, but it is faith that opens it. Because prayer can only reach, you know, till the door and knock. But actually faith opens the door itself. And yes, let's pray for the entire universe or many universes, whatever it is. And I think that's the best prayer. As you said, we never know what is coming. The only thing...
We don't know what is good. For example, simple practical day-to-day examples. When somebody is undergoing a difficult situation in a relationship, somebody is undergoing a divorce, what should you pray? Should you pray that their divorce should not go through and they should reunite? Or should you pray that they get divorced and each of them find a better partner? Or what should you pray? We don't know what is good. It's like when a doctor sees a person with a bad leg. We may think that, you know, amputation is bad because it make him lose the leg, but without amputation, his whole body may get ruined. That the doctor knows. So, we actually don't know what else to pray for. We don't know whether what we are praying is for good or for bad. So the best is to accept whatever Swami has said. What has Swami told us to pray for? Swami has told us to pray for Samastha Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. That's it. Because the Lord's understanding is better than mine. The Lord's wisdom is infinitely greater than mine. The Lord's love, the Lord's mercy, the Lord's compassion, everything about the Lord is infinitely grander than mine. And therefore I trust the Lord, I have faith in the Lord. And the Lord has told me to pray for Samastha Loka Sukhino Bhavantu, and I shall pray for Samastha Loka Sukhino
Bhavantu. And it's the best thing, because you know, we spoke about the three categories. I mean, if you believe everything is in the divine hand, then you pray to Him and surrender Samastha Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. If you think that everything is self-effort, let this be your effort. Let this prayer itself be an effort. Let us say that, you know, I don't know what is coming, but let my effort be this prayer. So I think that's the only message we can leave our listeners with.
And ourselves with. Because dear listeners, as we reiterate again and again, what we come prepared with is quite different from what actually happens here. And that both of us firmly believe is Swami's will and Swami's way of shaping our thoughts and feelings as we sit and discuss here. We extend our gratitude to all of you for being part of this satsang, and we invite you to share your feelings, your thoughts. You can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. We eagerly await your mail, because that too is part of satsang for us. With that, we offer ourselves at the lotus feet of our beloved Lord and bring this afternoon satsang to a close.
Sai Ram, you just heard an episode of our radio series, Afternoon Satsang. This is a live discussion between Radio Sai's Prem and Arvind on different spiritual topics. And today's episode was first featured as part of Radio Sai's Thursday Live at 12:30 PM on 6th December 2012. You can mail us your comments and feedback to listener@radiosai.org. Sai Ram.